Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and checking out the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host Fred Alveda, but he is right now at the PGA Merchandise Show. So we have who better than to be with us, our great friend and colleague, the European guru, Kieran Clark, live from Scotland. How are you, Kieran?
Well, thank you, Carlos, and I'm feeling great. And again, obviously it's 1 a.m. here in Scotland, so I'm live from Scotland. I'm burning the midnight oil tonight for you, but it's a pleasure to be on, as always. Look forward to coming on the Back 9 Report when I do have a chance to spend time talking about the game with you. Obviously, we had a great weekend in golf with Ricky Fowler winning the Abu Dhabi Championship, an incredible field there, a fantastic win for him. And people are now talking about a big four. With Spieth, Day and McIlroy. Is it premature? Quite possibly, but we'll discuss that later on. And of course, Jason Duffner came back from a terrible couple of years he's had on and off the golf course to rebound and win the Career Builder Challenge, or whatever it's called now. For me, it will always be the Bob Hope Classic. So
yeah.
Much to discuss, Carlos. And incidentally, is Fred Altvater going to appear tonight on the show?
Oh, he should be. He should be calling any time during the show.
We're not going to let him on, are we?
We have to, you know.
Do we really?
You know how he is.
I don't think
he's
so.
He's like Donald Trump. He has to be everything.
Oh, that's quite a comparison, Carlos. I'm not sure he'll appreciate that.
I'm gonna hear it when he comes back. Well, we'll see. What he says.
Fred has better hair for a start.
Oh, that I have to agree. Yeah.
That is unquestionably true.
And we'll have him, and also our VIG, very important guest of the week, will be Chris Vince, an interview that he did from the Reynolds Front Plantation there. So let's get started right away, and like you mentioned, we're going to start with the weekend backspin, talking about the European Tour, the Abu Dhabi HSBC Golf Championship. Tell us about that win by Ricky Fowler.
Well, it was an incredible win, Carlos. You know, obviously going into that week, we're talking about Spieth and Rory almost going head-to-head, playing together, obviously, on Thursday and Friday. But, of course, the man in that trio, completing the trio, was Ricky Fowler. He almost came in slightly under the radar. You know, world number five going into last week, he was criticized before or lamented by his fellow professionals by not really being a closer, being overrated was the word that, of course, was used. But he's proven them wrong in the past year, of course, that win at the Players' Championship, the Scottish Open at Gullen, the Deutsche Bank Championship, and, of course, he cemented that thing even further at the weekend in Abu Dhabi with a brilliant performance to win a big event. Again, he's become almost an international player, and a very successful one at that. You know, very few American players really, Carlos, travel well throughout time. It's always been the case. Some have, of course. Jack Nicklaus did it very well. Al Palmer, even Hale Irwin, I think, actually has won in almost every continent in the globe. But most American players don't travel very well. But Ricky Fowler is also a guy who has a very open, expansive mind. He embraces different cultures, different challenges, different climates. And I think that's stood him in good stead internationally, winning the Scottish Open and now, of course, winning Abu Dhabi. But it was a fantastic tournament, a great leaderboard, really compelling stuff on Sunday, when, of course, they actually had to finish the third round on Sunday as well after a delay earlier in the week. So there's a really long Sunday, a marathon day, but it was certainly a great one. And Ricky Fowler, you're winning there 16 under par, and he started well with two birdies and started his round, but then, of course, he derailed on the 7th of a double bogey, and that was really, we thought, well, perhaps it'll be when this challenge falls apart, but perhaps a testament to the strength of character and mentality that some people perhaps don't quite assume he has. He rebounded with an eagle on the next hole in the 8th, and that just silenced that and moved on, and he progressed and put a very solid round from there, and again won quite comfortably in the end, despite finding the bunker on the 18th hole. He made a very comfortable up and down there to get a nice win ahead of Thomas Peters, who, of course, is a player who has really come onto the scene in the past year, winning twice last year, coming in here, he's full of confidence, a young Belgian, 23 years old, and he has a massive belief in his own game where he can possibly be one of the leading players in the game in the future. And perhaps, you know, the evidence is there that that's certainly a possibility, given the way he's performed in an event like this. It was such a strong field, it didn't have a place at all. He has obviously a lot of power, but his short game kept him in it for the most part on Sunday. You know, missing great up and down, some great putts, but obviously a really talented player, who someone who quite possibly, and maybe even quite likely, could feature at the Ryder Cup this September at Hazeltine. But then the big guns, you know, Henrik Stenson's a guy who specialises in the Middle East, always plays well there. A guy who quite arguably has been the best ball striker in the game for the past 2 or 3 years, consistently. All the stats would probably bear that out to be true. But there's always been that one little thing where he didn't perhaps quite win as often as his talent, his ability would suggest that he should. But he's a fantastic player. And we talk about young guys all the time, the young 20-somethings, but perhaps Stenson, approaching 40, could be one of those older guys this year that might actually nick a major all of his own and stamp his claim as being one of the top players in the game at the moment. Then the big twos were sort of calling him right now. Rory McIlroy, obviously back, trying to retake his mantle as world number one, as the best player in the game from Jordan Spieth, of course, took all the headlines last year. And Rory looked fantastic on the first day. He was so imperious off the tee, which is obviously the strength of his game. His driving is incredible, powerful, accurate, straight. And he had that on Thursday. And Spieth afterwards played with him and said, you know, if I'm going to compete with Rory in the future, I'm going to have to get better than that. That's just how good Rory was that day. But he slightly stumbled on Friday and Saturday, but he rebounded really well on the final day to have a good finish, holding some wonderful putts and getting into that position in third place, where, of course, he actually finished second place on 4 occasions in Abu Dhabi, so he finished third this time, but one shot out of that. But Rory's fantastic. He's back to form, and it's going to be a real fascinating battle to watch him try and get back up to the top of the game, because we've always said that most people say that when all the top players play to their absolute best, Rory would probably win. Technically, he's probably the best player, but of course, Spieth's been disproving that theory in the past. And Spieth himself obviously had a mixed week. Didn't quite reach the heights, of course, of Kapalua, where he won by 30 under par, by 8 shots that week. But he played, you know, he got around the course superbly, you know, managed his game well, rebounded from not playing at his best, ground out the most out of his game, which seems to be his best talent, which is certainly an enviable talent to have. But at the same time, Spieth had some sort of funny comments during the week. We'll talk about it later. He spoke about being tired, all the travelling he's done. And of course, he had that thing I said earlier about how he actually was almost envious towards Rory's game. It's bizarre to think that a player who's world number one would say that. You know, Tiger would never say that, of course, but maybe there's a sense of vulnerability to Spieth. Of course, he's fantastic, and he's still the number one player in the world and still grinding out results at fifth place in a big event when he hasn't even played anywhere near his best. And that's obviously a sign of a great player. So it's a fantastic event, really, Carlos. And Ricky Fowler, you know, we talk about the big four, and is it legitimate? He's now world number four ahead of Bubba Watson. Is it legitimate to say there's a big four with Day and Spieth and McIlroy? You know, I'm not so sure about that, because I think, in the end, it sounds good. They're all popular players. They're all young guys, all great players, and likeable personalities, indeed. But it seems a little bit contrived. It's almost like the game's trying to create a new era itself, the media and the tour, the post-Tiger and Phil era, if you like. I think in the end, the conversation will become legitimate if these guys start trading majors, you know, going back and forth, competing with each other in the biggest events in the game. In the end, we look at the big three back in the 60s with Nicholas Palmer and Player. Those guys won almost half of the majors at that time, at least. They were neck and neck all the time. These guys haven't yet reached that height. So perhaps in a year's time, if these four guys are competing, trading majors between themselves, then perhaps the conversation is then legitimate. But right now, of course, all four of these guys are really exciting players, and it's a really fantastic period for the game to have those guys at the top right now. If we continue to have great events like this here, Carlos, it will be fascinating to watch in the future. But Abu Dhabi, Ricky Fowler, you know, I have always rated him very highly. I think he's a fantastic player. I remember watching him at St. George's in 2011 in the Open Championship in terrible conditions. He played brilliantly in that bad weather. And he's a player of talent, obviously working with Butch Harmon. His swing's improved, his mentality's improved, and again, he's just getting older and more mature. And he's proven in the past 10 months he's a player who can really grind out results in big victories and big events. And I guess in Yorkie Fowler, he may not be quite at the level of the other three just yet, but he's certainly, Carlos, going in the right way to bridging that gap.
And I have to agree with you, what you say about the big four and all that. I think it's early, but it's a good start. You know, I think that everybody is talking about them, and I can understand Tiger Woods is on his way out, apparently, and golf needs something else to cheer and root for. And definitely we would have to wait. At least Rory McIlroy, Jason Day, and Jordan Spieth have won 5 of the last 6 majors. So basically there's a foundation for it. But like you say, we would have to wait maybe 1 or 3 more years to see before we really start establishing them at the level that the original big three were. But Ricky Fowler is definitely making a case for that. And I would like to talk also about three players in particular for here. Now, first, I have to say that it was another case of so near and yet so far for Rory McIlroy in this tournament. Because, you know, it's okay. He's been second four times, and so he plays well there. And this year he had to settle for a share of third. But he led the greens in regulation stats for the week. But he just couldn't get enough putts to drop through the course of the week. He's just a little rusty, I think, still down at 41st in putts per round. Still, he's shaping into form and should look forward. I really am looking forward for him making that return to top form, and I'm sure, like you said to me, overall he's the better player, and he's going to make a run to regain that number one. To me, it's just a matter of time when it will happen. But it will be great to see him, like you mentioned, Jordan Spieth there, battling and, you know, grinding through it, and just Jason Day and Ricky Fowler. This is going to be a great year. I think it's going to be a great one. But I think Rory McIlroy at the end of the day will regain number one. Also, to me, it was an excellent week for Henrik Stenson. He made his return from knee surgery. This is just 6 weeks after he went under the knife. And he said he's still not 100% on it, so he's going to take a week off to rest it. So he's not 100%, and I know he always plays terrific, like you mentioned, in the Middle East. But he's off to a terrific start, and he's been playing well. And if he's not 100% with the knee, wait until he is, and he's going to be even better. And finally, you mentioned about Thomas Peters. I wanted to talk about him. I think he showed his class this week. He's a 6'5", 23-year-old. He averaged 310 yards from the tee during the week. And he kept Fowler under pressure, you know, to the very end of the tournament. But he had a closing round of 67 that gave him that solo second place. And it sees him climb 30 places to 58th on the official world golf ranking. Kieran, I'd like to say this is a guy to keep an eye this year on the European Tour. And you already mentioned that he could be on the Ryder Cup. He's already on the team on points, because on the world points list, he's number three right now. So he would be on the team. And it's incredible when I started seeing the makeup of the team, of the European Tour team right now, where you would see Matthew Fitzpatrick, Andy Sullivan, Thomas Peters, Chris Wood, and even Christopher Broberg. I know it's early yet, but, you know, it's those numb names there. But I think Peters would be a guy to watch, and I think he'll be there at the end of the day. So anything else you would like to add before we move on to the PGA Tour?
Yeah, I agree with that last point there, because I think, you know, obviously it's early days Ryder Cup-wise, but I do think that certainly Matthew Fitzpatrick will be on that team. And I think Thomas Peters has a very good chance as well, because a player who has the level, not just the power off the tee, but the level of confidence that he has, you know, he is so strongly believing in himself. He has almost a Patrick Reed sort of arrogance to himself, where he's so confident in his ability. And you have to have that. You know, all these players at some level or another, they have an arrogance, a level of self-confidence, because if you don't have that, you won't make it, because that's what separates the players who get on the tour and stay there and become successful, and the players who don't. It's not just about, obviously, the talent they have with the club in their hands, but obviously in between their ears. And I think Thomas Peters has the attitude to make himself a star, and of course he also has the playing ability to go with it, so he's certainly a player, as you say, to watch in future. But, you know, Abu Dhabi, certainly it got it was certainly appetizing and sets us up for a really fascinating build-up to Augusta, obviously coming up in April.
And can't wait for that. Hey, let's talk about the PGA Tour, you know, the Career Builder Challenge. Like you said, Bob Hope, but now it's the Career Builder Challenge in partnership with the Clinton Foundation. And it took a couple of good breaks to that. To saw
it rolls Jason off Duff. The tongue, doesn't it, Carlos? It's a wonderful title. It's fantastic.
I don't know why they put so many. Just leave it at the Bob Hope. It was so great.
Perhaps the bigger the title, the bigger the name, the bigger the event. I'm not sure that's how it works.
No. People don't relate to those big names anyway.
No.
So, you know, a couple of good breaks saw Jason Duffner back, like you mentioned at the beginning, in the winner's circle after he defeated Lindmerth in a playoff for the Career Builder Challenge at La Quinta. Again, he's 38 years old, and I'm going to say this just between you and me, so just so that Fred doesn't listen to it and nobody else, but this is just between you and me. I like to say, you know, 38-year-old, because Fred says that this is being old, when he's really not. So don't say it to anybody. It's just between you and me. But anyway, he was leading through 54 holes there at La Quinta, but a slow front nine over far on Sunday. It led the chasing of the pack back into the competition. But in the end, it took two playoff holes for him to beat David Lambert, who had a bogey on that second extra hole. For him, it was the fourth PGA Tour victory and his first since the 2013 PGA Championship. In the last two seasons, he has struggled, particularly with his putting, and has been 90th and 88th in the FedEx Cup in 2014 and 15, respectively. But this performance has given him great confidence. He looks in shape to push forward this year. He's up to 60th on the official World Golf Rankings from 120th, and he's in the last place right now inside on the Ryder Cup, so that's good for him, and he looks very confident on it. Also, this is the second time that David Lindmerth has lost in a playoff for this event. He was beaten by Brian Gay back in 2013. He managed a best of the day 65 in the final round this time out and was keen to take the positives from his performance. He's up to 36th on the official World Golf Rankings and is in second place. He's the second place Swede, of course. Henrik Stenson is the top Swede. Another note that I would have is I know Fred doesn't like this one anyway because he's another old guy, and by in Fred's terms, is an Asian guy, and it's Phil Mickelson. You know, in this, the first tournament he has played since splitting from Coach Butch Harmon, left to finish in a tie for third after four solid rounds in the 60s, he will be playing the next three straight events and will look to build on his showing. So, and he said afterwards that that was a validation that he's moving in the right direction. Again, you know, this is an Asian guy and friend's terms. Yeah. And finally, Kieran, it was a week of incredible scoring there at La Quinta. Dufner Lingmer tied for the lead at 25 under, but no fewer than 61 players finished the week at 10 under par or better. It's the top school out there. The cut after 54 holes came at 9 under par. Sad to say, Luke Donald was among the ones who missed it, Kieran.
Yes, indeed he was. But for Jason Dufner, of course, well, perhaps Luke Donald can look at Jason Dufner as inspiration that you can come back from the brink. And Dufner wasn't at the brink, really, in so many ways. You know, technically as a player, injury-wise as well, and of course at home where he had a divorce from his wife. So a tough time for him the past couple of years, really since he won the PGA Championship at Oak Hill in 2013. But, you know, Dufner is a high-quality player, you know, ball striker-wise. Obviously, as you say, he has a bit of an issue with his putting, particularly short putting. That wasn't really in evidence at all at the weekend there. And actually, his scrambling was incredible, of course. If you saw the shot he played on the 17th, on the final day, from the, well, it wasn't quite the rocks, but it almost was. You know, remarkable shot, almost went in. And then, of course, in the first playoff hole, he made a great up and down from well short of the green to keep himself alive. And then, of course, win the playoff in the next hole. So Dufner is someone who's a high-quality player who's come from the brink, and he played so well despite that. You know, he has been in that kind of position for a long time. David Lingworth, of course, actually has been in that position more frequently in recent times than he has. And so it was certainly impressive. I was surprised that Lingworth made such a grave mistake in the second playoff hole by missing the green so badly with his second shot and finding the water and really putting himself out of the situation. But, you know, Dufner's a fantastic player, and obviously, you know, Fred likes to call these guys, you know, 38-year-olds over the hill, they're finished, they're done, that's it. Champions Tour beckons for them. But in the end, you know, Dufner's someone who, you know, even though he's 38, he's only been a upper ranking sort of player for the last 5 years, really since he lost the playoff at the PGA to Keegan Bradley in 2011. So he hasn't really been he's not a young guy, but he's a newer guy. So perhaps has less scar tissue than many of the other guys who are younger than him may have. So I think Dustin still has a lot to say in the game going forward. Maybe he can get on the Ryder Cup team this year. That would be obviously a big goal for him now, certainly achievable. So maybe something to look out for. But Phil Mickelson as well, you know, another ancient guy, as you say. But Phil, he talks such a good game. You know, he's so confident. He always says positive things. He's never negative about anything. But, you know, he actually backed up this week. He played well. And it beckons well for him going forward. Because Phil, he isn't going to be the player that he was, which is understandable. He's older. That's life. But he's certainly capable. As I said, we forget that he finished second at Augusta last year in the Masters. So, you know, Phil is still capable in the big occasions to bring it. When he gets in the right frame of mind, the right energy, the right sort of position, then he can still be a contender. Maybe not every week, certainly occasionally, potentially in major weeks.
I totally agree, and like you mentioned, I am looking forward. He's going to play the next 3 weeks, and he's really pumped. And you know, that lets you know that he wants to get in shape for Augusta, so that will be a major push. And, hey, you have to tell me about Duffy Waldorf. What happened to him there in the Champions Tour?
Well, Duffy Waldorf, you know, a guy who many years ago was perhaps best known on the PGA Tour for wearing extraordinarily outlandish shirts. You know, he was really colorful character in so many ways, but at the same time, a very good player, very solid player for 20-odd years in the PGA Tour. He was consistently there. He won $12 million in earnings, won four times in the regular tour, so a real solid player. But the Champions Tour, he had a bit of a slow start, really. Didn't get his first win until November last year at the Toshiba Classic, but he's followed up this year, winning the first event on the new Champions Tour calendar. And he won it in dramatic style, of course, with a birdie on the last hole to finish one shot ahead of Tom Lehman, who was really the man to beat all week. Tom Lehman played incredibly, particularly on the par 5. I don't know if you saw the stats cards, but, you know, Tom Lehman had, I think it was three or four eagles this week in par 5. It was incredible. Actually, that's four eagles, three eagles in one round. The second round, Tom Lehman eagled the fourth, the tenth, and the 14th. Then again, on the third round, he eagled the fourth. So four eagles in one week, which is incredible. There wasn't quite enough to beat Duffy, who was obviously really solid towards the end there and played brilliantly throughout and finished one shot ahead of Tom Lehman for his second Champions Tour win. And Davis of the third, of course, won in the PGA Tour last August at Greensboro. He finished in third, three shots back of Waldorf, while the likes of Jay Haas and Joe Durant and Fred Couples and Kenny Perry also finished in the top six. Well, Bernard Langer, of course, the man who's obviously now without the anchored putter, obviously a new era for him, a difficult period potentially, but he's showing really no signs of that because he finished in eighth, really solid week, had a slow start on the first round, but two really good rounds in the weekend. DJ Singh was also there, Mark O'Meara, a really high-quality leaderboard. But also, as well, I must quickly mention that, you know, a couple of players broke their age, Carlson Champions Tour this weekend. Tom Watson, the great eight-time major champion, of course, will be playing his final Masters tournament this April. He shot 65 in the second round. He's 66 years of age, so he broke his age by one shot. Obviously, a great achievement, but certainly tested how great a player he still remains. And Hale Irwin, who, of course, I mentioned earlier, is now 70 years old. He shot 69 in the second round, so a fantastic achievement for him. Well, and he was down and tied for 31st, two shots behind a certain Mr. Colin Montgomery, Carlos, who finished in a rather disappointing tie for 26th. So, Monty, a slow start for the big man, but you know, a great start for Duffy. So, Champions Tour, obviously, it's always a great product. You know, we have so many great players, great names in the past, up the top, competing most weeks, and the standard is very good. And many of these guys, as Davis Love has shown, could still potentially win on the regular tour. So the standard is there, the quality of play is there, and the names are certainly there. So Champions Tour is always great value, and it's always fun to see which of these guys will reign supreme when we come to the end of the year and the Charles Schwab playoffs.
Definitely, and Colin, hey, he'll be there at the end of the day. So,
Of course he will, no doubt about it.
Yeah, he will be there. Hey, that wraps up our weekend backspin. Let's take our first short break. When we come back, we have the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Stanford. So don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the Par 5 News, sponsored by United Golf Network. Every week, we have Fred taking the long tee shots. You know, we need length of the tee shot, so I'm not going to take it. So, Kieran, you are going to take the tee shot. You know, you're like Bubba Watson, long off the tee. So, you know, tell us about Jordan Spieth, Rory McIlroy, and Ricky Fowler.
Well, unfortunately, Carlos, my driving is more like Fred Funk distance-wise than it is Bubba Watson. Not long at all. I'll be short in the trees, probably. So I'll try to keep it on the fairway, though, with this first tee shot. But yes, a great, you know, a lot of news. We were just talking earlier, of course, about Jordan Spieth and Ricky Fowler and Rory McIlroy, these new young players, and can they create their own era and really define golf in this generation? And, you know, maybe there's a sense that that's a possibility. As Jordan Spieth and Ricky Fowler, of course, were actually named, voted, two of the most popular athletes in the U.S. among the most coveted millennial demographic. And that, for people who may not be aware of it, it's a very American term, millennial, and that's for people who are essentially born between 1980 and 2000. So people who are aged between 15 and 35 right now. So young adults, really. And Spieth and Fowler both appeared in the top rankings of this list. And Spieth came in at number 17 from last year, which was a top 40 list, and it was topped by NBA superstar Stephen Curry. I have no idea who he is, Carlos. I'm not up in my basketball at all. But only two golfers appeared on the list, and one was Spieth, who came in at number 17 in a year that included five wins, two majors, and of course the FedEx Cup title and that $10 million bonus. And at the age of just 22, he was the second youngest athlete to appear on this list, behind only Kristaps Porzingis of the New York Knicks. And I have absolutely no idea who he is either, Carlos. While Fowler came in at number 35, behind running back Le'Veon Bell, and ahead of the NHL star Patrick Kane. And this is the second straight year, actually, that Fowler has actually appeared in top 40. And he, of course, won three times in the PGA Tour last year, including the Players' Championship. So these two guys, you know, they seem to draw an audience, a young audience. You know, Fowler obviously has always had that style, that sense of that kind of, which of course we saw famously at the weekend there with his new trousers and shoes that he has. But you know, Fowler brings in a younger audience. He has that kind of cool factor to him. While Spieth is perhaps more of a kind of an old school kind of young American boy, and that's very attractive to people in the States to watch. And I think that's also been the case. And I recall the Hyundai Tournament Champions back a couple of weeks ago when Spieth won there, of course, so convincingly. And the final round there in prime time from Kapalua was the most watched edition of that event for a decade, according to the ratings in America. So these guys are bringing in an audience. You know, it might even be a young audience, and that's obviously really attractive to the advertisers and sponsors and so on. It's also a good sign for the game that we're drawing in a younger audience. But the question I always have with this is, it's great for the TV companies and the tour, but how many of these young people who are watching the game and enjoying watching Spieth and Fowler and so on, McIlroy as well, how many of them are actually going to take that and start playing the game themselves? And I think golf needs to try and work on its participation problems more than its viewing problems, and the two things don't necessarily go together. Many people watch golf at home and don't actually play it. You meant that, obviously. Carlos, I don't know about you, but I assume you might watch the NFL, but I don't think you play in the NFL. So we do that. We do it in all kinds of sports where people actually watch the sport but don't actually play it themselves. So hopefully that won't be the case with these people watching the game. But even so, it's still a positive thing to be talking about, because actually, of course, in the post-Tiger era, if you like, it's really 2009 when he had the scandal and his game declined and he fell from grace. We're talking so negatively about golf viewing figures and so on. So this is a positive thing, I guess. Obviously, only a report from 120 Sports, but in the end, it's still a positive thing to talk about. And even more from Jordan Spieth as well, was he spoke about how, I mentioned this earlier, he said at the weekend at Abu Dhabi, he said, "I'm very tired," talking about the travelling he's done from Asia and Australia at the end of the year, playing in Hawaii, of course, then in Europe. And he's covering a lot of air miles and raking in those appearance fees and playing very well at the same time. But I think he's mindful, of course, as well, that he has to watch his schedule, trying to burn out, which is very easy to do, because actually, of course, Spieth put a very busy schedule last year, and of course he was very successful, but at the same time he didn't have any time to breathe and really consider what he had done. Perhaps that's part of the reason why he was able to continue that momentum. He had no time to really think about it. But at the same time, of course, you have to think about long term, how are you going to plan your schedule, particularly when you're a player, when you're world number one, you become so much in demand, people want more of you, want you to play in their events, and of course, chasing that dollar can be very appealing, particularly when you have agents who are pushing you to do that. But at the same time, you have to watch out for yourself. So I think Spieth's very intelligent, he's very insightful, and he's also very honest. And this is another example of that honesty, where he says not many players come out and say this so candidly to the press. And I mentioned earlier about the thing you said about Rory and how he needs to get better to try and compete with Rory's driving and so on. There's almost a vulnerability there, and I think that's sort of refreshing in a way. But at the same time, it's perhaps a bit surprising for a player who obviously is so great himself. But this one here is another example of that, where he has sort of vulnerability, he's being honest at the same time. But you know what? I think we should welcome that and embrace it. And hopefully Spieth gets the right schedule for him, because in the end, he's a fantastic player who we all enjoy watching, because so far in his career, to this point, he's achieved remarkable things. And whenever he plays, you get a sense that even more incredible things are certainly possible. And of course, Rory and Spieth will both be colliding again. Obviously, we saw them recently and the Offaly and Abu Dhabi, and they're both going to play at the Northern Trust next month in California at Riviera, one of the great golf courses in the West Coast, and for me really is probably the best event consistently of the West Coast swing. I'm not a great fan of the Pebble Beach program. It's unwatchably bad with all the amateurs hacking about and the utterly dreadful CBS broadcast on Saturday. But at the same time, I think Riviera is a really old-fashioned, interesting course with a lot of great history to it. That temple, of course, is perhaps genius, perhaps a disaster, but who knows? Other opinions are available, but certainly it's compelling, and watching those players try and navigate their way around a short hole that seems to beguile them and confuse them is always fascinating. And we'll see Rory play there for the first time, and of course Spieth there as well, so we'll probably see them no doubt paired together. It's funny how these things work, but I'm sure they'll be playing together, and it'll be fascinating to see them again going head to head on the first 2 days and potentially, hopefully, on the final day as well. So more to watch, and again, pleasant to idea that Rory's really intensifying his schedule leading up to Augusta, which is, of course, the one leg of the Grand Slam he's yet to win. And, of course, he finished very well there last year, his best finish last year. Obviously distant behind Spieth, but Rory's determined to win the Masters this year, and that'll be a real statement of intent that he's going to be back as leading player in the game. And Rory as well, he's going to play at Riviera, but he's not going to play at the Scottish Open this year at Castle Stewart. He confirmed last week he's dropping the Scottish Open from his schedule. He's played there the past few years, but he's not going to play this year. Trying to get a push of schedule this year is being really congested in the summer because of the Olympic Games. There's not much space for breathing space now between the Open, the US Open and the PGA. There's not much room for error at all for players. So Rory's had to sacrifice an event, and he's chosen the Scottish Open, unfortunately. It's a big loss for the event, naturally losing one of the probably the biggest named player in Europe, and that's a shame. But at the same time, what frustrates me about this, he's made comments about Castle Stewart, the golf course, the venue which of course has hosted the Scottish Open in the past in 2011, 2012 and 2013, by saying it's not a proper links course and it's not a great venue and so on, when in reality he's never actually been there. Now, it's true to say that Castle Stewart only opened in 2008, so it doesn't have the same history, it doesn't quite play the same way that, say, Royal Aberdeen would or Muirfield or Gullen would this past year. But at the same time, it's a wonderful modern design, it's a fantastic golf course, one of the best, I think, to really emerge anywhere in the world in the past sort of 10, 15 years. And of course, all the players who played in those years in 2011, 2012 and 2013 won the Open. Darren Clark won the Open after playing Castle Stewart. Ernie Els won the Open after playing Castle Stewart. And of course, Phil Mickelson went back-to-back at Castle Stewart and then at Muirfield. So I don't know where Rory's getting this from. You know, be honest and just say it's because of the schedule, how complicated that is, and there's not much time for a breathing space and so on and a break. But Castle Stewart is being unfairly slated by these players, and I think it's unfortunate because it's a great venue, great course, and it's proven it's not the most testing course in the world, but at the same time, it's a great place for players to express themselves and test in their games and try out some of the shots that they will require when they get to Royal Troon in July. Anyway, it didn't do Phil Mickelson any harm in 2013, Carlos, and it certainly wouldn't do Rory any harm this year. So a big loss for him, but you know, these three young guys, right now, as I said earlier, Fowler, Spieth, Rory, they're all dominating the headlines.
And it's like you mentioned, it's unfortunate, and I have to agree with you. I think it's a matter of scheduling for him. I think that's the problem that he has, and because this year, unfortunately for some people, the Olympics are there, and many of these people, these guys, they really want to play, and they have it in their schedule. So there's going to be scheduling conflicts all over. And just a quick mention about what you said about Jordan and Ricky being on the top 40 there. The key will be what you said about, will that turn and translate into more people getting into golf? You know, especially those millennials, which is the future of the generations right now. So, you know, it's going to be, I think it's too early still, but it's a good start that they're being recognized among the big names that were there. I mean, Stephen Carey right now is the biggest thing right now here
the big
in sports.
Names, so. I have never heard of.
I know, but
here,
remember, that's in America, so Stephen
Carey. I know. America's not the entire world, you know.
Yeah. But anyway, you know, it's great to see that, and it's great to see that Rory is going to be in the Northern Trust in Riviera. Mm-hmm. That's great news. So, hope to see it. Looking forward to seeing him. Hey, let's talk about now where Fred is, which is the 63rd PGA merchandise show in Orlando. It began today, and it will be running through Friday. It's marking off also the kickoff to the centennial celebration of the PGA of America, which is the founder and organizing partner of this show, and it welcomes more than 40,000 golf industry professionals from around the world to discover which are the newest trends and technologies from more than 1,000 exhibiting golf companies and brands. You know, this is the industry's annual major of business. It features a packed four-day schedule that begins with the PGA Show Outdoor Demo Day, which was held today at Orange County National Golf Center and Lodge, and continues at the Orange County Convention Center for PGA Show exhibits, industry presentations, education seminars, special events that are going to be running tomorrow through Friday. It's important to know for everybody, you know, this is the PGA Merchandise Show is a trade-only event, so it's not open to the public. The Global Golf Gathering that began today was with the special PGA of America Centennial Tee Shot to open with, as I said, the PGA Show Outdoor Demo Day. It was televised by Golf Channel, and the ceremony featured PGA of America officers and representatives from the PGA's 41 sections, along with 41 PGA Junior League golf participants from Greater Orlando. And during this time, it was announced that LPGA star Lexi Thompson was named an official ambassador for PGA Junior League Golf. Lexi now is joining Rory McIlroy, Michelle Wee, and Ricky Fowler as ambassadors for that youth golf program owned and managed by PGA Reach, which is the charitable foundation of the PGA of America, that is allowing boys and girls ages 13 and under to learn and play the game in a fun recreational setting. Lexi also hosted a clinic for those more than 40 boys and girls from the Orlando area PGA Junior League golf teams. They had a blast there. You know, thousands of PGA professionals and invited golf retailers previewed and personally tested the newest equipment, training aids, and accessories from more than 100 top golf companies at the 42-acre practice facility to create the world's largest professional demo event. You know, PGA Hall of Famer Lee Trevino was there, joined by his longtime mentor, instructor, and friend, PGA Master Professional Bill Exenberger, to spotlight the century-long impact of PGA professionals and help open the PGA Merchandise Show. Trevino is among a list of celebrities, renowned golf instructors, and special guests who will participate this year. That includes Annika Sorenstam, Bubba Watson, Hal Sutton, and Lou Holtz, among others, who will be providing engaging programs to enlighten and entertain attending PGA professionals and industry leaders. And we mentioned earlier in the show that Fred should be joining us anytime soon, so he will be giving us a little more details. But that's all I have for it. So now I believe you're going to have something to talk about some fashion trending things that are happening in the world of golf.
Well, I must say, Carlos, it's an incredible sort of issue, this. It's an issue out of nothing. I don't think it's a major problem one way or the other. But we've made it a big deal, it seems. And, of course, we'll talk about this a bit later on, the listeners, at the in the practice range after the next break, where we'll talk about the fashion and the old stuffy attitudes and how that will change in the future, shorts and so on, and Ricky Fowler even, the different fashions he has and how that can change perhaps in the future with the game and help grow the game in the future. But right now, of course, the tour, the European Tour, of course, has changed its policy in allowing certain players to, in certain events, to wear shorts during practice and pro-am rounds. We saw this, of course, last week there at Abu Dhabi, and it caused a bit of a chain reaction where people are now looking at the PGA Tour and saying, well, you know, why don't we do this? And the PGA Tour really have come out and said that they're not going to change their policy at all. You know, their policy is unchanged, according to Ty Votaw, who's the spokesman of the PGA Tour, the mouthpiece for Tim Fincham, and the players are required to wear, as he puts it, long pants and playing in practice rounds, pro-ams, or competition rounds. And, of course, the R&A released a quote as well, and they said that they pass shorts in the Open Championship even, and they'll consider it in the future, not for this year, but in the future. And, of course, they joked it would certainly be a pleasant dilemma to have if the weather here in mid-July, of course, in the UK, is sufficiently warm for shorts to be desirable. But, you know, it's a whole issue, Carlos. To me, I've yet to hear anyone make a really sensible point or even a convincing argument against players being able to wear shorts, at very least in practice rounds, if not in competition rounds. Who cares? You know, that's as far as I'm concerned. Put it this way, if John Daly can wear those trousers every week, then we should be able to wear anything we want. You know, it's incredible to me. And in the end, you'll put it this way. If you're a player playing in the PGA Championship in August in the States when it's incredibly warm, incredibly humid, if you or I were playing in those conditions, Carlos, one, I wouldn't be playing in those conditions. I'd be hiding in the hotel. But if not, we're out there. We'd be wearing shorts. It's the only sensible thing to do. So I don't see why the player should be restricted in that. You have the choice. In the end, it's because Jordan Spieth might be wearing shorts in the tournament. It doesn't mean that you have to wear shorts or I have to wear shorts. It just seems to be an issue out of nothing. And I think the floodgates have opened in the sense that I think the European Tour are making this progressive move. And I think Keith Pelley, the chief executive, is a very sort of progressive guy in the sense that he's out there, he's canvassing with the players, he's asking their opinions, he's seeing what they feel about things, and perhaps he's running the tour from almost a bottom-up approach from the players to the top, getting their input. I think we're seeing changes in the tour to that end to suit the players, and that's obviously the way to do it, because in the end, the tour is all about the players. If it wasn't for the players, there'd be no fans, and there'd be no tour. Well, the PGA Tour under Tim Fincher was much more of an authoritarian dictatorship, if you like. He's a bit like the Emperor in Star Wars. You know, he's rather than Obi-Wan Kenobi, who's Keith Pelley. That's one for the Star Wars geeks there. So again, Tim Fincher is someone who has rules of an iron fist. And to me, it's a little bit, I think in the end, time will go against him in this one. I think the wheels are now turning. I think in the next few years, we will see players on all tours having the ability to wear shorts. In the end, if you watch the players play every year in the US Open qualifiers on the Monday, the longest day in golf course, they call it in the States, all the players there wear shorts. You know, that's what people do, and they're playing. You know, I don't see how. Look at the LPGA Tour players. You know, the girls there, they wear some pretty outrageous stuff at times. To be frank with you, so I don't see why the male players in the PGA Tour, the European Tour, should not have the same right to really wear shorts and wear trousers. Have the choice, give them the option. To me, I don't see the argument convincing against it. In the end, people say, well, oh, it's not traditional, whatever else. Well, if we were sticking to tradition, Carlos, we'd all be looking like old Tom Morris right now. And very few people are. So I think in the end, time moves on, and the game should move along with the time. Otherwise, it will be left behind.
I'm not going to say, I'm going to leave my comments for the practice range, but it's very near what you're saying. I think you covered what I was going to say. So, but anyway, it's a brilliant move.
Fred wants to wear the trousers, probably. I bet he wants to wear them.
I think that's what Tim Frincham is really fearing right now. So that's
maybe to be fair. I wouldn't want to see Fred in shorts. So perhaps it's for the best.
Maybe. Let's talk a little bit.
Fred.
Let's talk a little bit about some musical chairs, you know, that are happening right now in the PGA Tour with some sponsors. What's that music? Oh, yeah. There's some musical chairs going on. I have to put that down.
I'm slipping into a deep sleep, Carlos, with a lovely tune in the background relaxing me. It's wonderful.
So here's the musical chairs on the PGA Tour sponsorships. It reminds me, like, when a coach is fired on a team league, you know, there's an opening, and from one team he moves to another, and then the other one from another team moves to that one, and then the other one to the other one, and so forth, right? So, well, the PGA Tour is not going to be outdone in this one. So the Northern Trust is moving the title sponsorship on the PGA Tour from L.A. to New York and will become the opening FedEx Cup playoff event next year, which could create a small domino effect of sponsors, which is happening right now. Barclays has decided not to renew its title sponsorship after 12 years in the New York area starting next year, so the FedEx Cup playoff first event will be called the Northern Trust. It will be keeping the previous courses, starting with Glen Oaks next year and rotating among Richwood, Plainfield, Liberty National, and Best British Black. So Chicago-based Northern Trust took over in 2008 as the title sponsor back there in L.A. The Riviera immediately helped upgrade that tournament, which is regarded among the tour's best golf courses, definitely. And that switch to New York left L.A. without a title sponsor after this year, but it wasn't for long because Hyundai Motor America, which had a one-year deal at Kapalua for the Tournament of Champions, had been talking with the PGA Tour about becoming the title sponsor in L.A., and the company's U.S. headquarters are just a few hours away in Fountain Valley in Orange County, and now they are the new title sponsor for the L.A.'s PGA Tour event at Riviera Country Club. The Tour and the Hyundai Motor of America, who have been the title sponsor for 6 years of the Winners Only Tournament of Champions in Hawaii, was announced last Wednesday that they will begin sponsorship of the tournament next year. But that doesn't mean the winner's only event that traditionally starts the year on Maui would be without a title sponsor. South Korea television giant SBS had signed a 10-year deal through 2019, but they had farmed out that title to Hyundai in 2011, so they have the rights. They could be the ones with the title sponsor, but the tour said they would also look for another title sponsor for Kapalua just in case. And the tournament could be more attractive now the way that the PGA Tour is trending towards youth. You know, like you mentioned earlier, now with so many young players such as Jordan Spieth, Jason Day, Dustin Johnson, Ricky Fowler, the Hyundai Tournament of Champions had its strongest feel in 10 years and its strongest rating. So considering that Phil Mickelson stopped playing in 2002 and Tiger Woods last played in Kapalua in 2005, neither has won a tournament since 2013. Now, that Tim Fincham definitely said that officials have been considering moving Hawaii swing to the fall for the start of its wraparound season. I would hate that, but all indications are that it will stay in January. However that plays out, the store still has a big few corporate holes to fill after this year. The biggest one will be the WGC at Trump National Doral, because Cadillac is not expected to renew its sponsorship after this year, which has raised questions whether the tour will leave the Miami area for the first time since 1962. As you might remember, the tour has a long-term deal with Trump National Doral, though that deal is subject to approval by the new title sponsor. As Trump's inflammatory remarks during his presidential campaign have caused golf to keep its distance, so you never know what's going to happen with that. The tour said in a statement last month that it would explore all options after this year's Cadillac Championship ends on March 6th. Also, Deutsche Bank is in the final year of its contract for the second playoff event outside of Boston. It's not likely to renew. There have been discussions about reducing the playoff events to 3 events instead of 4, something I know you would like a lot, Kieran. And also, have to mention Colonial also is without a title sponsor this year after Crown Plaza did not renew after this past year. So, Kieran, let the musical chairs continue here. And it's really amazing to me that they are not there. They're having problems getting the sponsors, and these musical chairs are happening.
Oh, it's beautiful, Carlos. Oh, just keep it playing. Keep it playing. Just keep playing it for the rest of the show. Yeah, it's obviously an interesting period for the PGA Tour, sort of a transitional period as such. Again, as they're going through a period where, as I said earlier, you know, the old established names are no longer at the top, they're no longer the big draws now, and they're trying to push these younger guys, Spieth, Fowler, Day, Rory, and trying to push those guys being the new leading players to really take the game forward within the next decade. And it will take time for sponsors to come fully on board with that, but that said, at the same time, Fincham, for all of his faults and issues, he's always been very good with sponsors and dealing with that and getting good deals for the tour. So I'm sure that will continue going forward. But it'll be interesting to see how that plays out in the coming months and years. But over in the European Tour, Carlos, I have something I mentioned about the slow play, which, of course, is something that everyone's kind of is a major issue in the game at all levels, particularly, obviously, the tour level where rounds take 5 hours sometimes, which seems incredible. The game is so slow, it makes it even harder to watch. And I remember I was covering the Dunhill Links Championship at St Andrews back in October, Carlos, and I went out. I was in the media centre for most of the week. I went out to the golf course to watch some of the play on the Friday afternoon, and I lasted about half an hour. It was so slow, it was unwatchably bad. Now, that's an extreme example because, of course, as amateurs playing that event and the old courses are generally speaking quite a slower course to get around anyway because it's double greens and so on. But at the same time, it's a problem that's rife throughout all levels of the game, and especially on the tour. And the European Tour League obviously announced its new measure to combat slow play. And this involves a rather interesting policy where they bring in two type pace of play observation situations, two types, monitoring and timing. And Keith Pelley pledged last year to address the critical issue, and that's come into effect last week. And he said, slow play is a critical part of our game, and we are determined to take lead in combating it, and this initiative is the first step. So monitoring by referees will take place as soon as a group has been seen to be out of position. And all players in the group will be notified that they are being monitored, but the monitoring will not be part of a player's record. However, any player met after that, exceeding the time permitted for a stroke, which is 40 seconds, with additional 10 seconds if the player is the first to play in the group, while being monitored, will be assessed a monitoring penalty. And any player having a monitoring penalty will then be timed from the next tee unless the group has regained its position. After the monitored group loses further time, the group or those players within the group who are deemed to be the cause of the delay will then be timed. Eventually, coming to, you know, there'll be financial penalties for this, which seem quite low for these guys, you know, £2,000 and so on, €2,500. But in the end, one of the first victims of that was Jordan Spieth last week, who of course found himself as one of those monitored players. And Spieth was somewhat bemused by this whole thing. He fell behind, I think it was his seventh hole, and he was told by European Tour chief referee John Parramore about it. He was under monitoring. But in the end, the reality was the pace of play, as John Parramore explained, is the pace of play in the European Tour is measured by whether a group keeps to the starting interval between groups, the time allotted between them, rather than if they're actually on the same hole, as it is on the PGA Tour. So Jordan Spieth was actually assessed a monitoring penalty after he hit a putt on the eighth hole, and he was advised as he walked to the ninth tee. So it was a bit of an odd one. It's something that will have to, it'll take time to settle in, I think. But it is a necessity. Even though it might have some teething problems, I certainly applaud the European Tour in doing this, because in the end, the game's in a position where it is too slow, it takes far too long, and amateurs at home, regular players, even young players, they watch the guys on television, they try and copy what they do. And if these guys are spending seconds, minutes standing over a putt, reading every single line, and so many practice swings and routines, and doing it time and time again, it takes long enough when it's a guy who's hitting 75 shots around, but when you're a guy that's hitting 95 shots around, it'll take even longer. The game is too slow, and this day and age has to be sped up. In the end, back in the day, the game was never as slow as it is now, and with all the modern equipment, the game should, in theory, be faster. So it's an issue that has to be dealt with, and I certainly applaud the European Tour for doing so. Maybe there are some problems with the initial plan, but that will certainly be ironed out as time goes on. But it will be interesting to see whether the PGA Tour follows suit and actually starts working a bit harder in penalising players for slow play, which they have not done, of course, for more than two decades.
I couldn't agree with you more. It's a great move, and hopefully it'll speed up and get this game a little bit more interesting, because I hate so much measuring and all that. I know that Fred once mentioned, you know, hey, a putt here, a putt there might mean that you're not second and it'll cost money. Hey, well, so what? You know, start learning how to play better. You know, it's equal for everybody.
Exactly.
And whatever is equal, there's no advantage for anyone. So you just have to follow the rules. Well, that wraps up our Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network, who wants every golfer to enjoy the game more and have the opportunity to earn more while doing it. They offer a top line of golf products, including popular name brands like Nike, Wilson, Greg Norman, Ashworth, TaylorMade, Adidas, and Where to Win. Everything a golfer needs, clubs, balls, bags, shoes, apparel, and accessories are available with discount coupons for huge savings. United Golf Network not only has an excellent product line, it also offers every golf nut the chance to earn commissions on product through their director's program. United Golf Network provides instant and free access to Global Affinity, which offers discounted travel through Wyndham Endless Vacations. Another free perk is membership to MyGolf in U.S., which offers discounted rounds of golf in 16 states and 3 Canadian provinces. And finally, For Sale by Owner allows members to sell used or new golf equipment online. Visit UnitedGolfNetwork.com today and check out the products, discounts, and their opportunity. And now we'll take a short break, and when we come back, we'll have our VIG, which is Chris Benz. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back 9 Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our VIG, very important guest of the week. His name is Chris Vince. He's the assistant pro at the Lake Oconee Course at Reynolds Plantation. here, there since graduation from Penn State in the PGM program, the Professional Golf Management. Chris talks about a great way for young people to find a job in the golf industry in the PGM program at participating universities and about Reynolds Plantation. Reynolds Plantation has 6 championship golf courses, including the Plantation course, which has hosted several PGA Tour and championship events. So let's listen to the interview that Fred sent us.
We are here at Reynolds Plantation, the Lake Oconee course, right next to the Ritz-Carlton Resort at Reynolds Plantation. And we're talking to assistant pro here at Lake Oconee, Chris Vance, who's been here for 3 years. And he came out of Penn State. He went through the PGM program. We're going to talk a little bit to him today about that. And Chris, thanks for taking a minute to talk to us today.
Oh, absolutely. Anytime.
So you've been here how long?
I've been here 3 years.
Now, you were telling me that you went through the Professional Golf Management Training Program at Penn State. Tell us, how did you happen to get into that program? Tell us a little bit about that, if you would, please.
Well, when I started working in the golf business as a card attendant when I was 16 years old. Not really sure what I wanted to do, whether I wanted to go in engineering or anything. But I really noticed that I loved golf, and that's what I wanted to do. And just talking to the one head pro that I worked for, he said, why don't you look at PGM schools? And being from Pennsylvania, Penn State was my first choice since it was, you know, about an hour drive from where I'm from.
Now, give me an idea. When you're in the PGM program, you have to take some core classes for Penn State, I'm sure, you know, English, math, and those kind of things. But give me some idea of some of the classes, some of the things that you thought a lot about when, as you're going through that PGM program.
Some of the core classes, I mean, just like you said, general education, but we did a lot of merchandising and golf cart fleet management, different levels of teaching. I mean, any aspect in the golf business to run a golf shop, we had to learn.
What about using all the technology today, like TrackMan and using all those things, understanding launch angles, spin rates, ball speeds, all that kind of thing?
We got trained a little bit on it, not too much. It was really on our own to do it. But with Penn State, they are launching a whole new biomechanical system. So it's really interesting how they're doing that. So it's kind of learning from, you know, a kinesiology kind of major and bringing in the golf management to whole new aspect of golf instead of just being the old guys that are a little bit heavier set to now being more of a fitness sport.
Tell us a little bit, well, now, so when you graduated from Penn State out of the PGM program, did you have any problem finding a job? Did they help place you? How did that work?
Good thing is we had a pretty much 100% placement rate. You know, basically through the internships we complete, typically one of those places will hire you back, which is how I got my job here at Reynolds. I did an internship here, went back to school for my last semester. They gave me a call, said we had an opening. I applied, and here I am today.
So Reynolds Plantation is about an hour east of Atlanta, Georgia. We're right on the Carolina-Georgia line, pretty much. Just looking at the courses, it looks like there's a lot of elevation change. You have the Reynolds Lake here, which gives you a lot of water views. Looks like you've got some great-looking holes. I have yet to play it. How many courses are there here?
There are 6 courses.
What is your favorite that you get to see?
Oh, they all have their own uniqueness. Really, I would say probably Great Waters just because of the whole back nine being on the water.
Well, fantastic. We're talking to Chris Vance here at Reynolds Plantation in Georgia. Would recommend anybody comes down this way to swing over here, stop in. I know a lot of people, when the Masters comes on, a lot of people rent houses here or come over here and stay and commute back and forth to Augusta. But it's a great place. You want to get some rounds in on your way to Florida or just to come down for a few days. So, Chris, thanks again for talking to us.
Oh, thank you.
There you have it. That was Chris Vance, the assistant pro at the Lake Oconee course at Reynolds Plantation. Here, Fred is not with us, so we're going to have to keep going. The time that we had for him started right now. So we're going to wait to see if he calls in. And if he calls in, we'll patch him through. But we're going to take another short break. And when we come back, we're going to go to the practice range and talk a little bit more about fashion trending things and some longstanding traditions that may be going down in golf. Don't go away.
Mm-hmm.
for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the practice range. Every week we pick a topic and we go back and forth on it. This week we're going to start talking a little bit, expanding on what Kieran was talking about earlier, about the shorts and those things happening there, also a couple of other things. Let me start with that. Tradition isn't what it used to be in sports. Definitely, we've seen century-old football rivalries that were cast away for conference realignment and expansion. There have been historic venues here get plowed under to make way for new luxury stadiums. Classic uniforms are shelved for marketing promotions. And this week brought news of two new potentials to sports tradition. One was in baseball here that they said that we're going to be using the DH, and everybody went like, what? And the other one, whether you see it, as needed progress or a greatest assault, depends entirely on your worldview. The European Tour, like Kieran mentioned, is now allowing its pro golfers to wear shorts during practice rounds and pre-tournaments for OAMs. Most saw a few exposed knees in the Abu Dhabi desert heat as harmless, while others think it's akin to shouting denim in a crowded country club dining room. Pro golfers wearing shorts in non-tournament rounds hardly matches up any significance. The vast majority of weekend amateurs and college golfers wear shorts every time they play during the summer months. I mean, when I was back in Puerto Rico, I would use them too. It's the heat. Only the pros and Augusta National members and guests are required to wear long pants. Whether that makes any rational sense comes up every time the temperatures hit triple figures at the U.S. Open or the PGA Championship. The European Tour decided to allow it only during practice rounds and pro-am rounds. The world didn't collapse after they saw Ian Poulter dancing down the fairway in scorching Abu Dhabi desert with his pale legs exposed. I mean, even Rory McIlroy said, hey, I'm just 2 weeks ago from having my legs pale enough to have him there. So, no problem. A compilation of four online polls showed overwhelming support, 73% of 8,160 combined voters for allowing players to wear shorts at least during practice rounds. Hey, but don't hold your breath for the PGA Tour to make that change. The word unprofessional gets thrown around every time when it comes to shorts, as if John Daly's Gary Strouser's screen professional. It's incredible. But anyway, Jordan Spieth even said, that it would be awesome. He just was worried that he didn't know it before and the hotel was too far away. He would have used his. But traditionals would like to hear that. It'll stay that way, like the PGA Tour says. But traditions these days are subject to change. And I think this one, like you very well mentioned, it was something that it's well done. I mean, the European Tour, to me, Keith Pelley is proving that he's definitely a very progressive person. Like you mentioned also, one very key point, he's listening to the players and what they like. And I think, he's out doing a little bit there, Tim Finchem, and we're starting to see those moves that he's making. And, I think the Tim Finchem and the PGA Tour are going to start feeling some heat about some issues. And I like what Keith Pelley is doing with that, and rightfully so. To me, it's no problem if the players want to use them for practice. That's one thing, playing in the tournaments, well, maybe as well. To me, also like Ricky Fowler using those trousers, I think they're ridiculous, but what the heck, it's his style. Those shoes, well, that's what he wants. At the end of the day, it would just be redundant in more revenue things, more revenue opportunities, because there would be more players using different things and their followers would like to use those things, and it's more marketing stuff that would come around. So I don't know. I'll stop it right there and let you say something before I say something else.
Well, I completely agree with everything you've said there, Carlos. You know, you've really taken what I said earlier and just went even further with it. You know, it's so true. I haven't really heard a convincing argument against players being able to wear shorts. It just, I don't really see the issue at all. I don't think it's a major issue one way or the other. I think it's just a minor thing that was kind of blown out of proportion that we often do in kind of the modern social media, Twitter age, where every, even the small things become a major problem, major discussion point. I don't think it is. I don't think it should be. I think players should have the right to wear, you know, whatever they want, obviously within reason. But in the end, as you say, if John Daly can wear those trousers, then anybody should be able to wear anything they want on the course. And I don't see how, you know, in the end, if you're someone, put it this way, if you're someone who's going to watch golf on television, and you're going to sit there in your nice armchair with your mug of coffee next to you, and your wife making the dinner maybe for you, this is a very old-fashioned image I'm creating here, but yes, you're sitting watching the golf on television, and you think, I'm offended because Ricky Fowler's wearing shorts. You know, what kind of person would that possibly be? You know, maybe Fred Altbater, I don't know. So if Fred maybe could take himself out of the bar and actually phone us and call us in the show, he might be able to tell us what he thinks about it. But I think in the end, it's a minor issue. I don't think it's a big thing altogether. And it's important what you mentioned there about Keith Pelley and Tim Fincham. I think Keith Pelley, in his sort of 8-10 months so far in the job, he's really set himself apart from Fincham. He's done things different to Fincham. He's contrasted himself in so many ways, not least his decision to take the WGC Bridgeton Invitational off of the schedule this year and to really bolster the French Open, making it an even bigger, stronger event, trying to get even stronger, a better feel for that tournament. It's the 100th anniversary. I think Keith Pelley is someone who he is progressive. He talks to the players. He brings a lot of experience, obviously, within the media. He knows what people as consumers want to see and what they want to enjoy. And he's proven that with his career. And I think he was the right man for the right time for the tour. He has got lofty ambitions. Whether he achieves it or not is another thing altogether. But he certainly has a vision to do so. And you know, the shorts and whatever else, that's a very small thing. But you know what? It's all part of a really bigger project from Keith Pelley. And that is putting the players and their desires and their wishes to the forefront. Keep the players happy. You keep them playing. You keep the sponsors happy. You bring in more fans, more people in attending the events. And the tour becomes stronger as a result.
Definitely. I mean, there are some legs that we don't want to see, trust me. We need to save the public from these images, especially the children. Some things are better left unseen, but hey, at the end of the day, it's just nonsense. So I don't know. But one more thing that I would like to bring in, and I would like to know your thoughts on it, because we already touched on the slow play. I think we're on the same page there. It should be done. I think just that what Rory and what happened to Jordan, he might have think because I heard that he said, referring to a slow player, that the team that was behind him wasn't even in the tee shot, in the tee, and he was maybe confused by that because on the PGA Tour, unless the team is there, you can take your time. And Rory McIlroy came in and said, a little bit of common sense could have been applied. But hey, these are the new rules. I mean, that's what you have to assert for, and that's you should know there's no excuse for it. And I really applaud the European Tour for tackling slow play. But the other thing is that something that is new for this year is the ban of the anchor putter. You know, Zach Blair there in Hawaii in the Sunny Open, he got asked that if he was anchoring, and it didn't look like it. Looked like there was some confusion, and it seems like this might be an issue. What do you see about this coming forward? I think that it's going to be very distracting for players if they're going to start calling, hey, are you anchoring it? What's going on?
Yeah, I think it's going to be something, a contentious thing going forward this year as players try and get settled into the new rule and so on. But, of course, that particular incident, of course, was not to do with a putter. You had a hybrid club pressed against himself, or not quite pressed against himself, to actually play a pitch shot along the ground. So it wasn't a putter in that particular instance, but obviously anchoring as a whole. So if you remember when Todd Hamilton won the Open Championship in 2004 at Royal Troon, he sort of pioneered the idea of anchoring the hybrid club into his belly, and then he almost using it as a putter from off the green that worked effectively for him there, of course, winning the tournament. I think it's going to become more of an issue, particularly when we get into events that have bad weather. So like the Open Championship, perhaps, and players are wearing jackets and so on, where they're wearing baggier clothes, and perhaps contact with a putter or an arc club is more likely to happen. But I think common sense will have to prevail here. I think you can see when somebody, the footage for Zach Blair, you watch that, it's pretty clear that the putter, or the club, only really brushed his shirt rather than pressed inside. It wasn't pressed in his belly at all. So I think it's the anchored putter thing. Obviously it's an issue where I think the USGA and the RNA sort of made an example out of that and really patted themselves in the back about it. When really it was a minor issue. You know, most players did not use the anchored putter, and players who did really, they did so out of necessity rather than they thought it made them a better putter as such, because they couldn't play otherwise. And I think it's particularly the case in the amateur game where it's a very rare thing. Long putters in the amateur game. You can go in any country. You don't really see many players on the course. I've maybe seen a handful of my entire life using an anchored putter in a regular golf course. But these people who do use it tend to use it because they have the yips and they couldn't enjoy the game otherwise. I do think it's unfortunate that this new rule was also implemented in the amateur game. I've always been sort of, this is a somewhat controversial point, but I've always been in favour of two sets of rules, one for the professionals, one for the amateurs. And I believe that is the case in baseball, where professional baseball has they use different equipment to the amateur baseball. This bifurcation is the word they use for it. I don't see why the regular players at home who play every weekend and they're the ones that keep the lifeblood of the game, why those players should be penalised because Ernie Els won a major with an anchored putter. I don't see why that should have happened. I think any sort of barrier you put up in the game, and this could be anything, from the not just banning certain people from golf clubs, but obviously even simpler things like dress codes and so on. And obviously with anchored putter, why should we put up barriers when we're so crying out for players to come and play, new players to join the game and play the game? Why are we putting up barriers, even small ones, to stop them from doing so? That's the wrong thing to do, particularly in this day and age. In the professional game, I'm not necessarily against the anchored putter. I was partly in favour of it. I just generally think that everybody should putt relatively the same way. I know people disagree with that. But in the end, the reality is, if you have a problem with your driving, that's life. You have to deal with that. Otherwise, you fall off the tour. Your pitching, again, same story. So the putting is almost a get-out-of-jail-free card for these players to play. And I have nothing against them, but I think it was... I wasn't necessarily against it. But in the end, the reality was there are bigger issues in the game to deal with, notably slow play, but also the fact that the golf ball travels so far now, and that has caused many problems in the professional game, made it less interesting to watch, made golf courses obsolete, and it made golf courses longer, and therefore more costly to maintain. And all these things have come together, and I think that was the real issue that the governing bodies have took their eye off, and that's a far more important issue than anchored putting. So I have sympathy with people who have on tour who have lost the ability to anchor their putter. I think the rule is somewhat complicated. I kind of agree with what Dottie Pepper said in January. She wrote an article on ESPN, and she said that, why not simplify the rule and just say a player might only have 2 points of contact with a club, these points being either one or two of his hands, not anything else. So, because in the end, why is Matt Kuchar's putting stroke lent against forearm? Why is that not anchored putting? I don't really see a convincing argument against that. I know it's not necessarily pressed against the point of his body, but it's not what you would term a natural stroke. So I think the anchored putting thing was poorly thought out, has been poorly implemented, and it's going to be problematic potentially going forward in the tour this year. But my bigger concern is the effect it will have on amateur golfers at home who, when the rule comes in for them, they might lose the ability to play to the level they enjoy the game at, and that's something that I think is unforgivable from the governing bodies. They should either not bring the rule in for amateur players or not do it at all. I think that in this instance there should have been a clear separation between the amateur and professional games. Do not punish the regular players at home because a handful of guys play with them on the PGA Tour.
I think I couldn't have said it any better, so I'm not going to say anything so I don't mess it up. So I'll keep it just like you said it. I'll second that. Hey, well, that will wrap up our practice range. And now we're going to take our final putts, and I'm going to start right away with some news about Zach Johnson, who, he always has taken pride of being from Iowa. And for evidence, if you look no further than the photo of him eating corn on the cob out of the claret jug that made the rounds on social media after he won the Open Championship last summer at St. Andrews. His home state returned the love on Wednesday when the Iowa Golf Hall of Fame announced his induction. The Hawkeye State Shrine selected the 39-year-old Cedar Rapids product and Drake University graduated unanimously in his first year of eligibility. He's a 12-time PGA Tour winner, joined the multiple major clubs at winners at St. Andrews, adding that claret jug to the green jacket he won in 2007. His victory at the Home of Golf, which denied Jordan Spieth a shot at the Grand Slam, makes him worthy of World Golf Hall of Fame consideration down the road. So look out for that one. He's joining now another role that includes the late Jack Fleck, who shocked Ben Hogan to win the 1955 U.S. Open, not to mention Jack Roll Jr. and Steve Spray, the only Iowans besides Johnson and Fleck to win on the PGA Tour. And finally, for me, you know, there's so many tournament news. The PGA Tour announced last Wednesday the 2016 Web.com Tour schedule, which is going to feature 25 tournaments played in 15 states and 5 countries outside the United States. It's going to culminate with the 4-event Web.com Tour finals in September and October. It's a season-long chase for the 50 available PGA Tour cards that encompass a 21-event regular season that runs from next week's season opening Panama Claro Championship in late January through the Winco Foods Portland Open presented by Kraft Heinz in late August and will end at the Web.com Tour Championships in Ponte Vedra, Florida, on October 3-9. This schedule will include the new event in Nashville that we announced last week here on the Final Pods and another new event, which is the Lincoln Land Charity Championship, to be contested at Panther Creek Country Club the week of July 11th to the 17th. With a 5-year agreement in place through the 2020 season, that event will feature a purse of $550,000. And finally, 3 weeks from now, if you're going to a golf tournament at Twin Eagles Club in Naples and you see that it's called the Chubb Classic, don't worry. Stay there. You're at the right place. The Ace Group Classic, which is a Champions Tour event that has been in the Naples community for 29 years, is being rebranded to the Chubb Classic. This change reflects the acquisition of the Chubb Corporation by a 17-year title sponsor, Ace Limited, and its adoption of the Chubb name. The Chubb Classic will be run February 12th through the 14th at Twin Eagles here. And I believe you're going to start your final pods talking about Jim Nantz, who may be challenging Fred to make it there to the 2036 Masters. What is all about?
Yes, indeed, Carlos, and hello, friends. As Mr. Nantz is, of course, with the opener of a broadcast every week on the PGA Tour, the NFL that he does. And Jim Nantz, of course, has been broadcasting from Augusta National at the Masters since 1986, when Jack Nicklaus won, of course. Nantz famously said that day, the bear has come out of hibernation, when Jack, of course, made that incredible back nine charge to win the Masters for a sixth time at the age of 46. And Nantz has covered every Masters since, of course, most recently as being the head play-by-play guy alongside Nick Faldo. And Nantz has the ambition to keep doing it for another 20 years until 2036, to almost have 50 years at Augusta National. That would mark the end of his career. And it would be quite an achievement for him, obviously, as a broadcaster point of view. Of course, weather, of course, as the many viewers who tune in to CBS every year to watch the Masters, whether they would be quite so happy to hear this, I'm not so sure about. Thankfully, we don't have the CBS broadcast over in the UK for the Masters, but I do, of course, hear Jim Nantz an awful lot throughout the year. And, of course, he does regularly appear at the conclusion of the Masters in the extraordinarily awkward and creepy and just bizarre Butler Cabin ceremony, which is one tradition at Augusta, Carlos, I think we could probably do without, because it's one of the most awkward pieces of television that you'll see anywhere every year. But Jim Nantz seems to enjoy it. And he also had a lot to say, Jim Nantz, in the same interview, about Greg Norman, who, of course, was fired from his position as lead golf analyst for Fox Sports, who, of course, covered the U.S. Open for the first time last year, in addition to other USGA events. It was a somewhat surprising move, perhaps, given that it's only been 1 year into the situation, and Nantz was commenting on that, saying, well, it takes a long time for new commentators and people together to actually gel and develop a chemistry and improve. It's a hard job to do. And it's hard for someone who's never done it before, like Greg Norman, has to come in there and try and be natural and be seamless doing it. But at the same time, as much as I think Fred has some sort of conspiracy theories about Greg Norman and why he's no longer there, from what I heard of Greg Norman last year and those broadcasts, he wasn't actually very good. I that's happy to say. I thought he was ill-prepared. I think he contradicted himself half the time when he was talking. I just didn't think he was very interesting at all. When there were actually better people on that broadcast, I think Brad Faxon was excellent on the Fox Sports broadcast. I thought Gil Hanson was a fantastic inclusion as well. But Greg Norman was arguably the weak point of the entire crew. You know, he wasn't good at all. And when you have a lead analyst, you have to have him commanding and dominating and really convincing. And for all of Johnny Miller's faults, he's always been commanding. And even though you don't necessarily agree with what he says, he actually says something, he has an opinion. Greg Norman just sort of trotted out continual cliches over and over again and spoke a lot without actually saying anything. And for Johnny Miller, much as people kind of criticise him, whatever else, they understand that, but he says what he thinks and he actually has an opinion. That's always very important for an analyst. So Greg Norman, who is gone from Fox Sports, we'll wait to see who replaces him there. I would like to think it will be Paul Azinger, who I think is one of the best and most underused golf analysts anywhere in the game. He's probably up there better than anybody else, in fact. He's certainly a better commentator than Nick Faldo is. And we don't care enough of Paul Azinger, who's consistently, he's entertaining, his knowledgeable, he's well-spoken, he's a really good command of the camera, and he's very good at what he does. And also, I have one last closing shot here as well, final part, which of course is involving Jack Nicklaus, I mentioned there a minute ago. And he and his wife, Barbara, have come out with a recipe book, believe it or not. You know, Jack, he's quite a businessman, Carlos. He does everything. He's got golf courses, he has wine, he has clothing, he has everything. And now he's got a cookbook. Incredibly. I don't know, would you want a special dinner made by the Golden Bear? I don't know. Golden syrup, perhaps you could use in his meals as a signature dish, maybe. I don't know, but it's now available for sale and people can go and buy it. And of course, it's Barbara's Sugar Factory is, of course, the red velvet cake, which is the sort of the highlight of our itinerary of menus you can create. So it's Jack Nicklaus. You know, you have to admire him, arguably the greatest player ever. But I must say, Jack, you're better than this. No more cookbooks. Come on, you've got enough money as it is. You know, honestly.
I believe there has to be a plate there. It's called the Murfield something. The Murfield something. I don't know. He names everything.
The Golden Bear something. The Murfield something. The Baltus Roll. The Baltus Roll Beast, perhaps. Augusta National. I don't know. The Augusta National. I don't know, the Augusta apple pie. There you go. You can have
the all time majors. The all time major or the major something. I don't know. Something.
Jack, you should have actually made this open to the public and we could have actually voted to try and name different recipes and give them Jack Nicklaus style names, couldn't we? And that would be a better way of doing it.
He should have, definitely.
Well,
well, Back Niners, that wraps up another week of the Back Niner Report presented by eDraft.com. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Thank you for listening to us for the past 90 minutes. Special thanks to you, Kieran. Always great and entertaining insights and analysis. You know, your views
and styles. It's been a pleasure, Carlos. Thank you.
Are always unique, so we thank you for being here with us. Also to our VIG, very important guest of the week, Chris Vince, the assistant pro at the Lake Oconee course at Reynolds Plantation. Don't forget
and
to
Carlos,
join.
Thank you to Fred Altvater for not calling in tonight. Thank you, Fred.
There you have it, Fred. I'm sure we're going to listen from him next week. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Blog Talk Radio. Also, to tune in or download our show on iTunes. If you haven't done so, follow our show. Our Twitter ID is Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Keenan Clark. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.